Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Deep Dive, where we take your sources and try to like pull out the important stuff, you know, the golden nuggets of knowledge. And today we're diving into the world of student loans.
Oh boy.
It's a mess right now.
It's a big one.
It is a huge mess. Specifically the chaos surrounding these income-driven repayment plans, or IDRs as they're called.
Yeah, you got your court battles, you have political clashes, and you have borrowers like you caught right in the middle.
Yeah, and we're seeing all these headlines about how Biden's SAVE plan is getting blocked, IDR applications are like disappearing, and borrowers are just left in limbo.
It's a lot.
It's a lot to take in.
Yeah, and navigating this whole thing can feel really overwhelming for people.
For sure.
And that's why we're here. You know, we're going to break it all down, help you understand what's going on, who the players are, what it all means for you and your wallet.
Exactly, because it's important to understand this stuff, right? Like, it affects so many people. So let's start with SAVE, right? That was supposed to be this, like, lifeline for borrowers.
Right.
It promised lower monthly payments based on your income and, like, a faster path to loan forgiveness. It sounded pretty good on paper.
Yeah, did it? It sounded like a win-win at first glance.
But I'm guessing that's where the legal challenges come in, right?
Yeah, unfortunately.
It's always a catch.
Always.
Especially with politics and money.
You got it. You hit the nail on the head there. A group of Republican-led states, they sued. They argued that the Department of Education was kind of overstepping their boundaries with SAVE.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, they sided with them. So they basically put the plan on hold.
Oh, wow. So what happens to all those borrowers? You know, the millions who were really counting on SAVE to make their loans, you know, manageable.
Right.
Are they just stuck with their, like, original payment plans, the ones they couldn't afford in the first place?
Well, that's where things get even more complicated. So the court's ruling basically triggered this, like, automatic pause on payments, you know, a forbearance.
Yeah.
And at first, that sounds good, right? A break from those payments.
Yeah.
But it's actually kind of a double-edged sword.
Oh, I see where you're going with this.
Yeah.
Forbearance means you're not making any progress towards that loan forgiveness.
Exactly.
Even under programs like public service loan forgiveness, which was designed to help people in you know, public service careers.
Exactly. It puts everything on pause.
And to add to this whole mess in the middle of all this legal stuff, the Trump administration decides to pull down all the IDR applications from the website.
Yeah, they took down everything.
Wait, they took down everything.
Everything, even the ones that weren't like directly affected by the court ruling.
Oh my gosh. So now borrowers who need to recertify their income, which is like a crucial step in making sure their monthly payments are, you know, actually affordable, they can't even do that.
Right, because they need the application.
Because the application's gone.
It's just gone.
It's a nightmare.
It is. It's a logistical nightmare. And it's left borrowers just completely in the dark. You know, they're confused. They're anxious. And the Department of Education isn't really giving them much guidance.
It's like they're just left hanging.
Pretty much.
And all of this is happening against this backdrop of, like, these longstanding political battles over student loan relief.
Yeah, it's been going on forever.
It feels like forever. Republicans have always been against these types of programs, right? Yeah. Like SAVE.
Yeah, traditionally they view them as, like, government overreach.
Right. So they're saying it's not the government's job to bail out student borrowers.
That's their argument. And they've proposed, you know, some alternatives. They talk about streamlining existing IDR plans and increasing Pell Grants.
Okay.
But a lot of people, a lot of borrowers, they're saying that those measures just don't go far enough, you know.
So they're not addressing the real problem.
Exactly. They're not getting to the root of the issue.
Which is like these sky-high tuition costs and this system that feels like it's set up to hurt the people who need help the most.
Right. It feels like it's rigged against them.
Yeah. So it's like we're stuck in this tug of war between these two different ideologies. And meanwhile, borrowers are just like, what's happening?
Right. They're wondering what's going to happen to their loans, to their future, to their finances.
It's a scary situation to be in, for sure. And it really highlights how badly we need clearer communication, better protections for borrowers, and ultimately a system that's designed to support everyone.
Yeah, a system that works for everyone.
Both the borrowers and the economy.
Exactly.
It's a lot to take in.
Yeah, we're just scratching the surface here.
Yeah, let's dig a little deeper and look at how all of this chaos is actually playing out in the lives of real borrowers.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's easy to get caught up in like all the policy details and the legal stuff.
Right.
But we can't forget about the people, you know, the real people who are actually affected by this.
Absolutely.
We're talking about families, dreams, you know, financial obligations. This is serious stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for a lot of people, these student loan burdens, they're a huge source of stress and anxiety. Like, it's always hanging over their head.
Absolutely.
I mean, in the articles you sent me, there were stories from people like Natasha Stevens, my Grandino Brigitte Knudsen.
Right.
They're all caught in this limbo. You're not sure what their options are. Some of them are even facing the possibility of being forced back onto these payment plans that they just can't afford.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. And their experiences really show that this isn't just about numbers on a spreadsheet.
Right.
This is about real lives. You know, yeah. Their ability to buy a house, to start a family, to plan for the future.
To just live their lives.
Exactly. And the lack of communication from the Department of Education, the uncertainty, it's just making everything so much worse.
It's like they're being asked to make these huge life decisions without any information, without any guidance.
Right. They're completely in the dark.
And to make matters even worse, you have these loan servicers, the companies that actually handle the billing and the repayment process. They're adding to the confusion.
Yeah, that's right. We're seeing reports of borrowers being pushed towards these unaffordable standard repayment plans or even hardship forbearance, which neither of those are good long-term solutions.
No, they're not.
And this brings us to another really troubling part of this whole situation. The potential for predatory practices within the student loan industry.
It's like just when you think it can't get any worse.
Right.
There was an article about the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, dropping its lawsuit against PHEAA.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a student loan servicer that was accused of illegally collecting on debts that had already been discharged in bankruptcy.
It's unbelievable.
It really makes you question whether the agencies that are supposed to be protecting borrowers are actually doing their jobs.
Right. It raises a lot of questions. And if you look back at the SBPC's investigation into companies like Sallie Mae and Navient, it's even more concerning.
Yeah, that investigation revealed some pretty shady tactics that were being used to mislead borrowers about their rights. So it's like we have this perfect storm brewing. You know, we've got legal challenges, political gridlock, a lack of communication, and then the potential for borrowers to be taken advantage of.
Yeah, it's not a good situation.
So what does all of this mean for the average person who's just trying to figure out how to navigate this system?
Well, first of all, I think it's crucial to stay informed.
Okay.
Don't just rely on what you hear on the news or what your loan servicer tells you.
Right.
There are resources out there like the Student Debt Crisis Center and the Student Borrower Protection Center. They offer guidance and advocacy, and it's a good place to connect with other borrowers who are going through the same thing.
So you don't feel so alone.
Exactly. And if you're dealing with a really complicated situation, or if you feel like your rights have been violated, don't be afraid to seek legal advice.
Yeah, it's important to remember that you have options, and there are people who can help you understand them.
Absolutely. And while the current situation might seem pretty bleak, it's also an opportunity to kind of step back and rethink how we approach higher education financing in this country.
That's a good point.
You know, maybe this chaos can be a wake-up call and push us towards a system that's fair, transparent, and actually supports both borrowers and the economy as a whole.
I like the way you're framing that. It's not just about fixing what's broken. It's about building something better.
Right. Something that allows people to pursue their education and contribute to society without being crushed by debt.
Exactly. We need to move beyond just pointing fingers and start thinking about real solutions.
I agree.
So could we explore like alternative models of financing?
Possibly.
Should we be doing more to address the rising cost of college?
Yeah, those are big questions.
They are big questions, but they're questions that we need to be asking.
We do.
And I think these questions lead us to the most important question of all. What can each of us do to make a difference?
That's a great question.
We've talked about the resources, the importance of seeking legal advice, and the need for systemic change. But where does the individual fit into all of this?
Well, I think it comes down to three things: staying informed, raising your voice, and holding those in power accountable.
Okay, I like that.
The more we understand about this system, the better equipped we are to advocate for ourselves and for real change.
So it's not just about like sitting back and waiting for someone else to fix it.
No.
It's about taking action.
Yeah.
Right? Like contacting our elected officials, sharing our stories, and demanding better from the people who are supposed to be representing us.
Exactly. It's easy to feel powerless when you're up against a system this big and this complex.
Mm.
But we have to remember that those in power, they answer to us ultimately.
Right.
Our voices matter, and collective action can really drive change.
I like that. And speaking of action, you mentioned earlier like the need to think creatively about solutions.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the ideas out there that you find like promising or intriguing?
Well, one idea that's gaining some traction is income share agreements as an alternative to traditional loans. It's basically a contract where you agree to pay back a percentage of your income for a certain amount of time after you graduate.
So instead of like a fixed monthly payment.
Right. It's tied to how much you're actually earning.
Interesting.
The idea is to make repayment more fair, you know, reduce the burden on people who might not get those high paying jobs right out of school.
Yeah. That makes sense.
So it shifts the risk away from the borrower and onto the investor.
Right. Like, we're invested in your success, so we only get paid if you do, kind of thing.
Exactly. Of course, there are some challenges, you know, like making sure these agreements are fair and transparent.
Right.
But it's a good example of the kind of out-of-the-box thinking we need.
I agree.
Another area where we need innovation is addressing the rising cost of college.
Oh, yeah, that's the root of the problem.
It is. Maybe it's time to rethink that traditional four-year degree model.
Right.
Or explore more affordable options like online learning or competency-based education.
Yeah, I think more and more people are realizing that college doesn't have to be this one-size-fits-all thing.
Exactly.
We need more options, more pathways to success that fit different interests and career goals.
Absolutely. And we also need public policies that support a more equitable system.
Right.
Things like increasing funding for Pell Grants,
okay,
making college more affordable for low-income students, and holding institutions accountable for providing a quality education that actually leads to good-paying jobs.
It sounds like we need a multifaceted approach.
Yeah.
Individual action, innovative solutions, and smart public policy.
You do. It's a lot.
It is a tall order, but I do think there's reason for hope.
I agree.
The more we talk about these issues, the more momentum we build towards a better future.
Absolutely. A better future for students now and for generations to come.
Well said. So as we wrap up, I want to remind our listeners that they can find links to all the resources we mentioned in the show notes.
Yes, definitely check those out.
And if you're feeling overwhelmed or unsure of where to turn, remember, you're not alone.
You're not alone.
Reach out to those organizations, connect with other borrowers, and know that your voice matters.
It really does.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the student loan landscape.
It was a pleasure being here.
It's a journey with a lot of twists and turns.
It is.
But by staying informed, being part of the conversation, and advocating for ourselves and for others, we can navigate this maze and create a path towards a brighter, more equitable future.
Absolutely, we can.
And a huge thank you to David Laguerre, our producer, who makes this deep dive possible.
Big thanks to David.
We'll be back soon with another deep dive into a new topic. Until then, keep learning, keep questioning, and keep the conversation going.